So we are at Musar Day, the last day of Perek Vav in Sefer Vayikra, the first Perek of Parshas Tzav. So today is the 11th of December, 2017. It is what, Chaf Dalet? No, Chaf Gimel. Chaf Gimel Kislev, Tafshin Ayin Ches. And there is a mitzvah over the course of this parak. There's a couple of mitzvahs over the course of this parak. One of them is that the Eish HaMizbeach, that the fire that is on the Mizbeach, has to last. Eish Tamid Tukar HaMizbeach Lo Tichbe. That the fire on the Mizbeach should continue regularly. It shall not be erased. And Rashi points out over there that Machabe Eish HaMizbeach, that if somebody does extinguish the fire that's on the Mizbeach, you actually violate two lavin, the Shnei Pamim Lo Tichbe Ksiv. It actually mentions Lo Tichbe twice, so therefore you violate two lavin. So what is the importance of this din? What is the essence of this? So the Sefer HaChinuch has one of his interesting essays on this topic, where he kind of goes into further depth about what the possible meaning of mitzvos would be. But before that, here in the Imrei Baruch, Rabbi Simon Sefer, so he quotes another idea from the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says that this aids Rabbi Yochanan, lo tichbe af masos. The Rabbi Yochanan said that not only does it not get extinguished at all, but doesn't even get extinguished even while they're traveling. That's what the Yerushalmi says, that they, not to be extinguished even while they're traveling, and that's perhaps is the lesson you're supposed to teach, that the Mizbeach represents Avoda, the Eish represents Torah, Mitzvos, etc. And perhaps the idea, he said, he quotes here from Rav Yosef Greenwald, from the Av Beistin of Papa, that Derech Moser, ki inei HaTorah Nikras Eish, and he quotes, Koach HaTorah, Paul Machshav Estos, Veshash Om Neves, Aknes Ves HaMedesh, Shubimokam Akravas, HaKorban, that the fire should impact us while we're in Shul, which is the place of bringing our korbanos, but that's not enough. It also has to impact us while we're traveling, and perhaps that is the lesson of the fire not being extinguished. Not so much that not be extinguished while it's on the Mizbeach in the Mishkan, but that it continue on even while they are traveling. Now, just on a side point, that raises a question for me, and that is we learned an interesting idea about how the Mizbeach in the Mishkan was constructed. Anybody remember? Right, when they actually constructed the Mishkan, they filled the inside with dirt. It was actually hollow. Right, remember that? Right. So how did they maintain a fire going on the Mizbeach even while they were traveling?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't have an answer. I don't know. I didn't look up the Yerushalmi inside. Where is the Yerushalmi? Yerushalmi is in Yoma. Okay. So, I don't know the answer to that question. But
kind of dangerous also.
In those days, they were better with fire than we are today. They're on a different madrega, yeah, Bruce. Anyways.
A little box around it. Vince.
I think it was the shops. They might have used.
There's got to be a huge flame.
Nah, it might have been electric. All right. Anyways, so says the Sefer HaChinuch is perhaps most prominent for saying the following idea, that the lighting on the fire of the Mizbeach each day is. Right, the Sefer HaChinuch points out that this seems to contradict another idea, or maybe it would really be impossible to violate this din, because in addition to a fire being lit on the Mizbeach, how else was there a fire on the Mizbeach? When we think about the Mizbeach, the fire on the Mizbeach, we think about coming from Shemayim. Yes, the fire is coming from Shemayim. Hello.
Hello.
Are you looking to? There might be someone across the hall looking to meet with you. Okay, that the fire is falling regularly from Shemayim. So if the fire is falling anyways regularly from Shemayim, so what are we adding specifically? So it says the Sefer HaChinuch, Kine Yadua, the Sharshei HaMitzvah is Ki Yadua, Hine Yadua Hadavar Bineinu Ve'Eitzel Kol Chacham Kinisim Gedolim Asher Yasa Akel El Bnei Yisrael B'Tuvo Hagadol Li'Olam Yasem Derech Seser. That anything, anytime that Kadosh Baruch Hu does a mitzvah on behalf of the Jewish people, he's always doing it privately, he's always doing it quietly, and he's doing it in a way of tznius, v'nirim ha'inyanim, nasim tzas kilo him b'darchei ateva, mamish u'makarov l'teva. And Hashem makes it so that it looks in a way like it sort of is being done b'darchei ateva. And where's the classic example of that? Even by the Kriyas Yamsuf, even when the Yamsuf was split, which is obviously a nis mefursim, It says over there, "Vayolach Hashem esayam buruach kadim azakol laila," that Hashem had a wind going, a very strong wind going the entire night. "Vayasim esayam lacharav avikuamayim," and that wind is what caused it. So obviously, it's considered a tremendous miracle that it actually took place. But nevertheless, it has to. There sort of is something that an ingredient that's going to come for people. Hashem is going to attempt to hide it in a certain way. So to hear, even though the fire is coming down from Shemayim, in order to hide the miracle, we're responsible for making sure that it's lit. And he concludes by saying that this is one of the major ikarim that we learn from the fire mizbeach, that hasnaig b'hatsena lechas, to act in a way of tzniyus, to act in a way of being modest, not necessarily revealing, not necessarily sharing all the things that we do. Just Hashem is content with a person lighting the fire and having it sort of be contained within that. Or Hashem is content with the wind blowing and having it contained within that. Hashem doesn't have to be so out and saying that it's our mitzvah. However, I always thought of one source for this, but here he actually quotes another very interesting source that's not necessarily supposed to be totally to that extreme. The extreme is everything that I do should be totally quiet. Nobody should possibly know about the things that I do. Because there is an idea that a person should publicize what they do in order so that other people can learn from them. And specifically people in your own household. And he has a very interesting proof, not really a proof, but an interesting drasha from Rav Chaim Elazar Shapira. Who's Rav Chaim Elazar Shapira? He is the Minchas Elazar. The Minchas Elazar was the Munkacher Rebbe in the days leading up to the war. The book I'm reading, Who Will Lead Us, has a lot of interesting things about the Minchas Elazar and about Munkacher in general, of the five Hasidic sects that he details about their succession issues. I found the chapter on the Munkachers to be very the most fascinating of all of them. There's a video of the Minchas Elazar. You can catch it on YouTube. That the Minchas Elazar's son, and I never really knew this until I read the book, but the Minchas Elazar's son was childless, as several of these Hasidish rebbes, they were childless. Sam was wondering, well, he just talked about his son, right? So he was childless for many years, and the Hasidim were nervous, okay, who's going to be the successor? So they convinced the Minchas Elazar to divorce his wife and marry another woman. And they had a son. She had a daughter. She had a daughter, and they brought in a son. They had this, so this daughter, when she turned to the ripe old age of 13, it was time for her to get married to a boy who's, the ripe old age of 14 or 15 or so. And they found a son of one of the Hasidic Rabbanim in Poland to come, and he's going to marry this girl, and he was going to be the successor. He was going to be the next Munkacher Rebbe. So that wedding was a huge deal. That wedding was something like 20, 30, 40,000 people were invited to this wedding, and they brought a video crew from America to film this. This was in the early 30s, and you can find it on YouTube of people of them asking the Munkacher Rebbe, "Do you have a message for the Jews in America?" And the Munkacher Rebbe looked in the camera and says, "Shabbos, you got to make sure to keep Shabbos," and that's the message that we have from this. It was a very fiery person. The story with that boy is fascinating. That boy who was supposed to take over as a Munkacher Rebbe, I can't share it now. It's going to share, but find that book and read it. Well, no, they are in Hungary. Munkachers are known for being anti-Zionists. They're sort of the Satmar's they're Satmar's tamer little brother. Not as intense as Satmar, but still pretty intense in that particular way. As I mentioned before, my family in theory is a Munkacher family. My grandfather used to learn in a Munkacher yeshiva, and my great uncle was actually a dayan in the town of Munkach. I have a sefer on the shelf in my house, and that quarter, I'm everything. I'm one quarter Hungarian. That's my father's father's Hungarian. My father's mother is Galicianer. My mother's father is Polish, although moved to Germany when he was like 13 or 14 years old. And my grandmother is hardcore German. So I get
not Litvak.
No Litvish, right? No Litvox, but other than that, I got everyone else. That's southeastern Poland, but it's like its own region. Yeah. Okay, so anyways, so the Minchas Elazar said that that explains the pasuk that we have at the very end of Sefer Devarim. You recognize this pasuk probably. Hanistaros Lashem Elokeinu, Vaniglos Lanu Ulvaneinu Adolam, Lasosis Kol Divrei HaTorah Zos. That the hidden things are for Hashem, and the revealed things are for us to do, and to take care of this Torah. So how do we normally understand that? That pasuk is normally understood to be about tshuva. That those things that are hidden, that Jews do privately, that's up for Hashem to take care of. Hashem will handle those people that violate the prohibitions in private. And the people that violate things in public, so we're responsible to go and take care of them. But comes the Munkacher and says, no, Hanistros Hashem Elokeinu, in Adam Mastir Maisom L'chalutin. If a person does his things quietly, Zayil Hashem Elokeinu. Oh, that they would be for Hashem. Rak HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yodam Mizev Yaf Echad Lo Yomer V'Kabel Hashpa Mizu. Then only Hashem will know about this, and nobody else will be able to get Hashpa. Nobody else will be influenced by his righteous act. Adam Hanigloz. But if he does things openly, in Adam Megalam Aizav, as Lanu Ulvaneinu Adolam, Lasos is called Divei Torah Azos. Then it will be us and for our children, etc., to inspire us to do the entire Torah. Hear the pshat.
Yeah.
That has to be somewhat public. So there is not even talk about here, but in the Hilchos, the source that I knew about this is in Hilchos Tzedakah. That the question is a famous Tshuva Sarashba, where he was asked, is it appropriate for us to publicize people's gifts, people's tzedakah gifts? Is that something that we should be doing, or something that we shouldn't be doing? Is it something that perhaps we should be encouraging? And Tshuva Sarashba famously said yes, that it's something that should be encouraged for two reasons. One is it will perhaps convince more people to give gifts if they know that they're going to get honor from it. And second of all, plus it will inspire others to give. That will then put pressure on others, and you'll be able to get more tzedakah, and that's considered a good thing. And that Rashba is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch, the implication is that it's preferable for a person to publicize their gifts than for those gifts to remain private and quiet. This isn't necessarily the same as a person giving to a particular ani, right? That there's that a person is giving to a poor person, so then there's an idea of keeping it private in order to hide the embarrassment. But we're talking about giving to institutions or giving to large stock organizations where there's not a direct connection from the giver to the taker. So it is appropriate to publicize those gifts. Yeah?
Why could you give anonymously? We have gifts from anonymous donors. People say, well, somebody gave. That's publicizing our gifts.
That's the highest form.
Does that pressure you to give more?
No, but you get more if I know who it is.
Well, sometimes it does. It depends on.
And
when you have an appeal in shul, we don't really do this. Really, most places don't do this kind of stuff anymore. But there is pressure, right? There's pressure put on people that way. A person gets up, I'm willing to give $1,000 for the mikvah, right? So that puts pressure on other people. Well, he's giving $1,000. I got to give. That idea certainly exists. You don't necessarily see it. It's culturally it's a problem, right? But we also, I think, lose out for it. Right? It's anonymous gift after anonymous gift after anonymous gift. Should be public gifts. Okay. So that is.
So the question is
humility. So he says, right? So it's something that you need to find the Shvil Hazav. You need to find the golden mean. On one hand, one should be humble about what they do. On the other hand, you shouldn't be so humble and so quiet such that you lose the ability to influence others. Right? So.
Rashi says there were three fires in the Mishkan.
Yeah.
All going constantly.
Yeah. So, right, which one was connected with the fire above? I wonder about that. I don't know. I'm not sure. So Sefer Achinah continues on and says another thing, that bracha is found when a person puts in their hishtadlos, when a person does the things that they need to do. I mean, even though we know that Hashem is going to be taking over, it's still Hashem doesn't make miracles from nothing. So we said before, Hashem doesn't do the first thing that Sefer Achinah says, Hashem doesn't make miracles from nothing, because Hashem wants to be modest. There's an idea of tznius involved. Here he's saying, no, that's just not the way it works. Hashem doesn't do freebies. Hashem does miracles when it's based on something that already exists. So that's what we see with regards to this. And even though the fire is going to be coming from Shemayim, the fire only came down from Shemayim once the fire came up from the ground. And it's off of our actions. It's off of the human interaction that fire was able to work.
From Shemayim coming down?
Yeah.
Where was it? Well, it was outdoors.
Outdoors. There was a fire. There's a pillar of fire that came down. We read about it at the end of Sefer Shmos, that after the Mishkan was completed, so the Shekhinah came and the fire came and the fire was continuous.
I thought it was just at the inauguration.
No. That took up residence. In fact, the Medrash describes
like a beam coming in, like a beam of fire.
Yeah, so that's one of the miracles that exists in the first base of English, not the second base of English. So the truth is, if you would have asked me, I would have said that's what the mitzvah is. The mitzvah is the absence of a fire coming down from Shemayim. We're responsible to retain the fire on the ground. That's what I would have said. So let's say for Chinuch goes beyond that. But there is a medrash that describes Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was taken, I think he went to exile, or he ran away before the destruction of the first base of Mikdash. That he ran away, and he the Rav talks about this. And the very first word in the day Kinos was the very first word is Shavas Surah. That all of a sudden there was a cease. There was the Kedusha ceased. And there was a cease of the relationship with Hashem. It happened very suddenly. So the way the Rav invokes the Medrash, where it describes that, what do you mean it ceased immediately? We knew there was Gila Raya Shvichus Dami, we knew, and Avodah Zarah, we knew that people were suffering, we knew that they were under siege, we knew that Shavas Sarva Thomas, we knew all these things happened. So there's a Medrash about Yirmiyahu going into exile, was he was afraid of the Jews, I forget who he was afraid of, and Hashem at some point telling him to go back. Okay, now it's time for you to go back. So the Medrash describes that he's coming back, and he ran away in Israel someplace. Ran away someplace else. And he comes back and he sees the fire coming up from the base of Migdash. He said, "Ah, wonderful. I see the base of Migdash. I see the fire is coming off of the Mizbeach." And then he gets closer and he realizes that it's not the fire off the Mizbeach, but rather the base of Migdash itself is on fire. So that's what he described. So he was in shock. He said, "How could it be?" So what do you mean, how could it be? Yirmiyahu, you wrote the book on Bnei Yisrael sitting and suffering and the suffering that would ensue because of Bnei Yisrael sinning. Why are you so in shock? He says, no, he was still in shock that it would actually occur, that it actually comes true. Okay, so we see this similar idea. We've got to, of course, tie in from Hanukkah. Where do we see this idea in Hanukkah that Hashem doesn't make miracles from nothing? So that's the famous answer to the question of the Beis Yosef, right? What's the question of the Beis Yosef? Why is it that we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days? We should only celebrate for 7 days. The first day wasn't a miracle. And all these answers. But in the Beis Yosef itself, he asks, and then the Taz adds in another. We've spoken about this in the past. As my friend Rabbi Josh Flug puts it, there you can either argue that there was, what is he called, a protracted combustion, that the fire took a long time. One understanding is that every day it only diminished 1/7 of the fire, of the 1/8 of the oil is all that was used. The other assumption could be that it's spontaneous regeneration, that all of a sudden came from nothing, that it burnt down and then just reconstituted itself. The problem is, if you assume that it reconstituted itself, so then that might not really be considered oil. Right? That's the I think we gave a Hanukkah shir on this a couple of years ago. Right, if it reconstitutes itself, so we don't call that olive oil, that's God oil. So how could we use that? How could they use that in the Beis Hamikdash as oil if it's not really oil that comes from olives, etc. But anyways, the Taz says that it diminished 1/8. 7/8. That as he spoke, no sin brach l'arvi. Right, mash ein kim b'davar. Gam kam b'nei schan ki ilu hayin nidla kol mashay b'layli. It didn't burn out the entire thing. But if everything would have burnt out, there wouldn't have been a way for the miracle to happen. El vade shagam b'layli rishon nishtayr b'mashay hayin roila u'men nishtayr. Rather, it must be on the first night. After the first night, it used that which was it remained. They caused to remain that which was enough to be left in order for it to then reconstitute itself from that. That it wasn't reconstituting itself from nothing; it was reconstituting itself from something. And therefore, that was the way that the miracle was able to form. That's the answer to the question.
Was it one candle that kept on burning for the 8 days, or was there like a new candle?
I always assumed that it was the entire thing. Oh, they relit, right? The avoda was done. That was relit, but every day somehow there was a full thing of oil. At least that's the way the Taz understands it.
Because it was the menorah, right? The menorah was seven. So was the second day, were there two? candles like we do, or there was just...
No. They have the avodah in the menorahs to light all seven candles. So every day they would light all seven candles. There would be some remaining, though, at the end. And from that which remained, it was able to reconstitute itself enough for the next day. So the Taz is saying that the only way that the miracle would have worked is if there is something that remained. So that's the miracle of the first day, that there was something that remained in order for it to then reconstitute itself for day number two, for night number two. Yep.
I heard another interpretation of the miracle was finding oil.
Right. There's of course the Sefer Ner Lameya. We heard of the Sefer Ner Lameya. Ner Lameya is a Sefer that has 100 answers to that question. There's
another one was, just the fact that oil burns is a miracle.
Which might be the answer to the spontaneous regeneration case as well. The fact that there's oil at all is a miracle. Right. So. Yes. Or the olive oil that we make, where does it really come from? So it also comes from Hashem. So what's the difference if Hashem makes oil directly, or whether you have oil that comes from a tree, which comes indirectly, not indirectly, but comes via a tree from Hashem. Okay. So then you have one more idea that comes out here, and that is that Rashi, on that pasuk, where Rashi says that Ish tu kam izbeach lo tichbeh, the Gemara in Meseches Yuma comes and says that that not only has to do with the fire on the mizbeach, but also the mizbeach on the menorah, and the fire in the menorah. The fire in the menorah actually came from the mizbeach. That the fire that they used to light the menorah inside the Kodesh came from the mizbeach that was outside. So what do that's learned out from this pasuk. That's the din d'oraisa, it sounds like, that's being learned out from this pasuk, which the Gemara deduces in Meseches Yuma. So what is that idea? What is the idea that the two of them are connected? So the menorah, of course, represents the idea of Torah. That is, the menorah represents wisdom, the menorah represents Torah, while the And what's the idea of the Mizbeach? What does the Mizbeach represent? The Mizbeach represents tshuva. Or that's a large aspect of what the Mizbeach represents. The Korban Chatos was brought on the Mizbeach. A lot of the Korbanos have to do with the idea of teshuva. So the learning that we do should not just be intellectual learning, but it has to have to do with tshuva as well. It has to be a self-improvement aspect to the Talmud Torah as well. That's perhaps connection number one from the Eish to Mizbeach. Another idea that he quotes here comes from Rav Aaron Cutler. Rav Aaron Cutler points out that the... We have another pasuk that appears at the very end of Sefer Devarim. Ki mitzvah azos, sharnochi mitzavcha yom, ki karovi lecha davar ma'od. Lo rechoka, he doesn't have the whole pasuk here, but isn't very, this mitzvah is not really far. Rather, ki karovi lecha davar ma'od, b'ficho v'vavcha lasos. So this mitzvah rather is really close, that you have in your heart and in your mouth to be able to accomplish. Right? We're familiar with that pasuk towards the end of Devarim?
Yeah. Right before Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, we say right before Rosh Hashanah. So what is that mitzvah alluding to? So the Ramban on that pasuk says, the Ramban says it's referring to tshuva. That's the problem. The Ramban says it's referring to tshuva. That the tshuva is not very far. It's very easy for you to do, which itself is a bit of a question. Really, tshuva is so easy for a person to do. That's number one. So then the Gemara, but the problem is the Ramban seems to be going against the Gemara. The Gemara itself says, what's that pasuk referring to? The pasuk is referring to Talmud Torah. The pasuk is referring to learning Torah. So, does the Ramban have a right to give a different pshat than the pasuk? So the answer is yes. That a person is permitted to sort of argue on the Gemara in areas of drash, in areas of agadata. In fact, this past Shabbos, so we spoke in Beth HaMedrash about Yehuda's humility, about how the Gemara in Meseches Sanhedrin, Rabbi Meir criticizes Yehuda for his humility, that Yehuda shouldn't have just said, oh yeah, we'll sell you Yosef and Yosef will be okay. Rather, Yehuda should have gotten up and said, we're going to bring him back to Yaakov. Guys, this is ridiculous. And the brothers would have listened to him.
That wasn't really a question of humility. That was a question of just not stepping up.
The Gemara says that he criticizes Yehuda for compromising. What was his compromise? His compromise that was, rather than take Yehuda back to his father, he sent him down to Egypt. Right? What?
I thought the drush was about, he said we can sell him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, we sold him. Why do we? Selling him was a compromise. That's the problem. So we could have run back to the father and said, instead we went ahead and did that. So someone pointed out to me on Shabbos that they showed me in the exponent, Rabbi Riskin had a Dvar Torah that said exactly the opposite. The reason why Yehuda is chosen to be the leader of the Jewish people is because he was able to figure out a way to compromise. Doesn't quote any sources. He just says that. So is he wrong? Well, you could say that a person is permitted. You are permitted in areas of drash to argue on the Gemara. First of all, that's only Rabbi Meir's opinion in the Gemara. So it could be that maybe others disagree with Rabbi Meir. And beyond that, in areas of drash, a person isn't necessarily bound to the drashas that are written in the Gemara. Although I would be very hesitant to go straight up against the Gemara. But anyways, that's so the Ramban is permitted to do it. But still, right? The Gemara says Talmud Torah. The Ramban says not talking about Talmud Torah. Rather, it's talking about tshuva. So he quotes from Rav Aaron Cutler that even though the mitzvah of tshuva miskayemes ayde sheyazov achotei chato v'yasichen mimachshav v'yigum rablibo shelo yasu od v'yinachim al sheaver v'yisvad v'svasav. That was the mitzvah of tshuva. Mainly, the mitzvah of tshuva is that a person thinks in their mind and establishes in their heart that they're no longer going to do that, and they say vidui with the mouth, and we're not going to go ahead and do it anymore, as the Rambam details. However, chidsha Torah prat nosav mitzvah tshuva. The Torah adds in another aspect of tshuva. Davi gamkin prat v'chelak b'cheftza de tshuva v'hu talmud Torah. That there is another aspect of tshuva that is talmud Torah. What is that? What is the idea of talmud Torah? Because Torah is the pathway to bring one closer with Hashem. That tshuva is reactionary. Tshuva is, I did something wrong, I'm now going to bring myself to the status quo. What is the Ramban teaching us by saying an aspect, this pasuk of this pasuk is referring to tshuva, which the Gemara said is really talking about Talmud Torah, because a major aspect of tshuva is also the advancement process. That person is going to get better. A person is going to enhance themselves, and that is done via Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah is the plus side of the tshuva, the flip side of the tshuva, and the two of them are connected.
What about tefillah? I thought it would be more connected with tefillah than with tshuva. Isn't the tefillah the replacement for
So how to parse out, well, what does tefillah do versus what does Torah do? I'll have to leave that for another time. Oh, I see the time is up.